Next case is 99-461, Jerry D. Smock, Executrix versus Charlotte Hall. I'm sorry, I do not know who the attorney for the appellant is. You've not checked in when I was taking. Tammy Gibson?
I know, I have people here missing in that last case. Who is? Interest, baby.
The policy in question was a new policy as of November 1, 1995.
Which policy? The uninsured motorist policy?
The policy we're talking about.
I'm sorry, as of
November 1, 1995.
We stipulated that the policy was renewal dating back to 1994.
You stipulated that it was a renewal policy. I'm sorry, that doesn't help me. Is it a new policy as
November 1, 1995? The part stipulated that it's not a new policy,
that it was renewal of an earlier policy. Okay, what was the date of the policy that you renewed? You said it's a renewal of an older policy. What was the inception date of the policy that was renewed?
We have not decided that you have the original policy by retelling.
So it's your contention that the policy that was in effect was pre-October 20, 1994, the date of Senate Bill 20?
Correct.
All right. Let's assume that's correct. Does that then, your contention is it would eliminate 3937-18H and A1 with regard to single policy limit and set off.
I'm sorry, you stipulated that the revised statute applies to that.
That's what I thought.
From the accounting. We don't know the original inception date. We're counting back to what the earliest date could be, would be after September 29th.
That's what I thought you stipulated to, but if your policy is pre-October 20, 1994, then the stipulation would not have been...
Right. No, we stipulated...
All right. Okay, now we're on the same page now.
Sorry about that.
What you have done, then, is stipulated that the law in effect on October 20th, 1994, is the law in effect for this case.
Correct.
All right. That brings you directly, then, to the set-off and the single policy limit questions.
Right.
In 3937.18H and... For liability, 3937.41. Okay. Why shouldn't Senate Bill 20 apply? If the language is clear as to set off.
The language in the statute permits the utility to apply set off to the policy limit. It dictates that their amount be not available for payment to an insurer. Because of bodily injury by or on behalf of persons or organizations legally responsible, doesn't say how that setup is to be applied. That policy provision is ambiguous. That could mean that it's a single one-time lump sum setup on the limit. But it can also mean that multiple claimants are permitted to bring separate and successive setups against the same individual who's entitled to one of the policies with her person's limit.
Your argument essentially is that the policy is ambiguous and it should be construed against the incumbent. That's what it comes down to.
Correct. This court has held in case with the same account.
I thought your argument was the amount available for payment.
Pardon?
I thought your argument was centered on amount available for payment, not necessarily ambiguous.
It's a two-part argument.
Oh.
We have to look at the policy provision that provides the setup and how the setup is going to be applied. Once we determine how the setup is going to be applied, we have to determine from what limit we're working. If not, one of them is the other. To determine whether the underinsured claimant is an underinsured voter, we must look to what that claimant actually received from the court. Four claims share in $100,000. This is not the same as if they find a limit to limit analysis and subtracting the total amount of policy from the total amount of the underinsured voters
program. Please see if I can understand your math and help you understand the $100,000 policy each time you come on. The matching UIM policy was also limited. So if you just take policy and policy, your argument is to say that 25, let's
take 1. Is your argument that she's entitled to 75 then from the UN? Correct. And your argument is that all four of these are entitled to get $75,000 more each, or do they split the other one? The argument is that each of them can come to the appellee and make individual claims that $100,000 they're entitled to. Do they each get 75?
She only got 100 persons split four ways.
five more, is that so you're not even matching to the person, you're matching. You're saying their policy is per person, but ours is per current. The sign-off provision and the language of the policy written by employee has ambiguity in that the sign-off is master of how it's to be applied. And the language adds to the statute and trying to make the policy apply to the single cell person limits. But then the action is in the place. Let's say you only have one person in here. They get 100,000 for 20. Would you have a claim? So the single claim that they receive 100,000 for the maximum claim for you right now. They would know when they come. Your claim arrives from the fact that you're asserting that more than one person is injured. You no longer look at limit, you look at just what the injured person got. What is the claim? So if we had 10 people injured, we have 10 separate claims against the UN policy. Let's say you're 10 people injured, they each got 10. Now you claim they can go up to 300. They claim against 390,000 each. Right, up to the policy limits. The policy language provides that the limit of coverage is a maximum limit of liability for all damages arising out of bodily injury sustained by any one person in any one accident. The revised statute provides that language can be included, which essentially runs to all claims resulting from arising out of any one person's bodily injury. Collectively be held subject to the single per person limit, and that those claims shall constitute a single claim. The policy that Kelly has written does not have the same language. It does say claims instead of damages. This can be interpreted to mean that the one person who receives bodily injury, whatever the claims are, if he has property damage or he has consortium or bodily injury, he's limited to that per person limit. It also could mean that reasonably interpreted, each person who suffers damage is limited to the purpose. This language has been found to be ambiguous in other cases. In Holt and recently in Dare and recently in Leon versus Western Reserve, similar language and similarly stuff, and the court found that there was ambiguity in the issues and how in favor of the insurance. If the stop does not apply with each person coming to discuss the claim separately and making their claim, it's an equal protection argument that it doesn't treat the insurers in the same way. The person who was able to claim it together for the thousand and lose that for the thousand, got what she contracted for, walks away from the table, and has $100,000 doesn't make it another review item. But the person who shares, and assuming even if you go a step further, that they are not all insured under the underinsured motor statute or policy question. They're not, the person who's insured that day is only to a small portion or fraction of the person's policy. Is penalized and doesn't get the full amount that she contracted for. In this case, it happens to be that all of these claims are insured under the policy. We argue that each person is entitled to sell the first limit based on this court's holdings and based on the General Assembly's enactment of RC-212502, the wrongful death statute, which recognizes that all these persons are presumptively damaged. They also have found in the, or placed in the Constitution, that those damages will not be limited. Those two findings, that the General Assembly has made and the holdings of this court, dictate that these provisions that limit the policies to single persons limits are unenforceable because they directly violate public policy. Because the amended statute is in direct conflict with state law, common law, and other statutes in the state, appellants assert that it is unenforceable for the insurance company to limit these claims to single per person limits. Because the ambiguity to the policy, even directly in relation to the statute, even if the statute is upheld, the single per person limit is permitted. These ambiguities do not allow the police to enforce the language of the policy.
You said because the statute is in conflict with common law, that it cannot be applied.
Right.
Is the General Assembly permitted to change common law?
The General Assembly can.
So long as it's not unconstitutional.
Correct. But in this case, again, to disparage the way the persons were treated, depending on how people are making claims, does create an exception argument.
Thank you, Ms. Gibson. Mrs. Senate.
To me, that's your second argument, and if that's not right, then you should tell me. But I think, isn't your first argument that the policy limits match?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. If that's right, if the policy limits match, you say that there's a set off and case is over. Right? Okay. Now, what if they divide it, as is alleged here, five ways, $20,000 each? The tort fees are $100,000. Now we get to the amount available for payment language. Does that not still run headlong into your second argument, which is, doesn't make any difference how many claims there are, they're all subject to a single policy limit?
Yeah, I think they are related, and I think that, as far as the first one, the first issue in my brief, which is, limit versus limit analysis, I think that's where maybe the general assembly language that was a little more clear.
Because it is different, available payment in A2, that language is not in A1.
That's correct, but I think it's important to know that at one time, the statute in A2 provided that the limits of liability would be reduced by the amount that's recovered as opposed to the amount available for payment. So, presumably, the legislature made that change for a specific reason. And I think, although maybe looking at the language of the statute itself might leave some room for doubt as to exactly what the legislature intended, I think when the legislature took an unusual step of actually putting in part of its amended substitute Senate Bill 20, when it specifically stated what the intent was, which is what to overrule or supersede the effect of this withholding. I think they made pretty clear what their intent was. If you look at Section 7 of the amended Substitute Senate Bill 20, it specifically states that the intent was to overrule the holding of Savoy, in which there would be underinsured motorist coverage available, even when the limits of the service themselves were the same. And it's important to note that in Savoy, every community that did involve multiple claimants, you had one scene and several people making derivative claims. And the Supreme Court General Assembly nevertheless said, we're intending to supersede the holding of the void that you don't do a limits versus one comparison. The legislature made no distinction between single claims and multiple claims. And our position is the insured got what it contracted for. The named insured was 15 and contracted for $100,000 of uninsured motorist coverage and underinsured motorist coverage. The $100,000 was obtained from the tort fees. The way it was divided really can't impact motorist liability. It could have all been allocated to the wrongful death claim and then allocated to and then, there would be other people that would be left on out of the state, but that's not something that really impacts motorist contractual obligation to a named insured or is left to the union. I think, in addition to the language of paragraph 7 of Section 20, there's other language in the statute that also supports the proposition that it should be a limited
one
is that the statute specifically states that you repair the limit of coverage available under the tort fees policy. So the limit is not an underinsured or coverage, but in the statute, those provide the limit of analysis. There's also language that is specifically intended in the statute to ensure that there is underinsured limit coverage in an amount not greater than underinsured limit coverage. And I think that's a critical point that the legislature made in the
Well, if it's limited to the one person liability, why pay for the $300,000? If it's limited to the one person the one person limit, $100,000, why sell the $300,000? I'm not getting anything for my money.
Well, I think that's not necessarily the case.
Why isn't it? Your policy says it's limited to the per person, one person of coverage.
Well,
you never get to the 300 because of the provision in the policy knocks it out.
You can get to $300,000, but only if you have more than one person injured.
We have more than one person injured here.
You have to be injured yourself
and not just from the death. The death of a son is not an injury as contemplated by the policy. But it's not an injury. So it's not covered. I can't understand that if you can only recover the one person limit, why you sell $300,000 worth of insurance? But they're all limited to single coverage liability. Not under the uninsured motorist coverage.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it would be true. If they were struck by an uninsured motorist, they would, if they each had sustained a bodily injury as opposed to a derivative claim, if they each had a bodily injury, they could get insurance coverage up to $300,000 per limit. However, if you do get one bodily injury, the legislature specifically stated
where's that?
I think if you look at
there, and, but I think, when you talk about bodily injury, I think understanding of that is that does not mean a derivative injury for loss of consortium or other emotional harm.
There's nothing in the code that says a mental injury is not